Blog Talk Radio.
From Newark, New Jersey, WDM Publication presents a public address by Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman for human salvation, titled Good Life for Muslims in Many Different Communities.
Peace be on you. As Muslims greet, Assalamu alaikum. We praise God, Alhamdulillah. We praise God and thank Him. And we seek Him for forgiveness, and we seek Him for guidance. We believe in Him and trust in Him, and we associate nothing in worship with God. We witness that Muhammad is the last prophet, that he is the servant and messenger of the one God. The prayers and the peace be upon him. Sallallahu alayhi wa sallam wa ba'd. We salute him with the traditional salute and what follows of that salutation, our salute to the last prophet of God. We indeed, again, enjoying ourselves in Newark, New Jersey, with the Muslims and many believers of the city and the area. We had a wonderful day with you yesterday. We thank Allah for answering your prayers that the rain wouldn't fall on us, and it didn't. And we're thankful again for another beautiful day today. We're very thankful. We are really very pleased to see the response to the invitation to come for the address today, the public address. You have responded so wonderfully. We're very happy that you're here. We have a topic that I think is of interest and should be informative, or at least should be refreshing, especially for those who have been Muslims for a long time and are just beginning to feel comfortable that we have arrived at that junction that our souls anticipated. Praise be to Allah. You who were with us when we were following the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and heard the many things good that he said and registered a lot of the good hints too that he made. See, there are some who heard but didn't hear all, because they weren't registering the hints that he was making. So we thank Allah that there were enough of you who were not just listening to him to hear what he was going to say about black people and getting plenty of money and good homes and friendships and all walks of life, but you were also listening to him to see if he had some help for your soul in its route to its destiny. And you wouldn't be pleased until your soul was pleased. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad knew that. So he put out some hints to help us feel comfortable in our souls while we were following him. Praise be to Allah. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad promised us in the name of his Savior. He promised us plenty of money, good homes, and friendship in all walks of life. Now, sometimes in English, the most important thing is the last thing said. In English expression or English composition, English speech or composition. Sometimes the most important thing is the thing that's lastly said. And in this statement, I think that's the case. The most important thing is the thing that lastly said. Friendship in all walks of life. Now, see, the African-American people, we were not just needing money and the material comfort or good homes. What we needed most in our, for our soul's happiness was to be accepted by human beings on this earth. You know, psychology teaches us that the worst burden a person can carry is rejection by its society. If its society rejects it, that's the worst burden, the worst pain, the worst misery that the person can suffer. And here we were, a huge population numbering into millions in this country during the times of its most evil days, who were rejected by the society. The society that we were in rejected us and only tolerated us because of our value to them as slaves. We know the history, so we don't want to repeat all that. It's not necessary for today's address. But we know long after the law itself came, we were still a people seen the same way by this society. We were still looked upon as inferior class and as rejects, unwanted people. I know I can almost hear your screaming out there, some of you. You're screaming in your own minds or in your own bodies. You're saying, they still don't want us. Well, let me tell you something else. We still don't want them. Now, isn't that the right thing to say? Praise be to Allah. So what I'm saying is, there is the way of God for all creatures. And his way is to create the creature right, and then when the creature goes wrong, to have mercy on the creature. But after mercy, there's nothing else. And we have received mercy. Both sides have received mercy. Now, if they feel like they are, they don't want us, we don't want them. In other words, there's some trash that's going to remain trash. There's some devils that's going to remain devils. We just don't want that among us. But we accept the way of God. And the way of God has never been that everybody is going to be beautiful and human and sweet. No, no. That's not the way of God. He has not created us like that. He has created us to be creatures of choice. We can make our own choices, independent choices. And to me, that's the greatest, I would say, evidence or the greatest testimony to God's mercy, that he made us creatures of choice, creatures to make independent choices. And and even when God speaks of his giving us Islam, the Quran, Islam, the religion, the expression tells me that even there in that expression, his own expression of his gift to us of Islam, God is saying that he recognized our independent free will, that he had made us creatures capable of making free, independent choices. He didn't say that I have imposed this religion on you. He said I have preferred this religion for you. I have preferred this religion for you. Now, that's how we talk to our children when they got up, and we recognize that they are intelligent, so we don't want to speak down to them anymore. So we don't dictate them anymore. We say, well, I prefer this for you, but you're your own boss, you know. To me, that's the greatest testimony to God's mercy. is that he creates preachers and then give them the mental tools, the mental faculties to make judgments for themselves and even reject God or reject the idea of God if they want to. God won't even impose upon us respect or belief in him, respect for or belief in God. He won't impose that upon us. He leaves us to make our choices. That way justice is done too. If God had imposed something upon us in his creation, creating us, like obedience to him and without any freedom or power to disobey, then God would have not, in my opinion, shown the mercy, as much mercy as he has shown by creating us as he created us. The greatest demonstration of mercy is to create a creature, allow that creature free choices. And also in doing that, I said, then that's real justice. It's real justice. It's not justice if all of us are forced to accept the same thing. That's not justice. That's not justice. Not to human beings. Justice for stones and rocks, I guess. But for human beings that have a mind to think, it's not justice that God even imposed his will upon us. To me, that's not justice. If he gave me, created me to think, then he should allow me to use that. If he created me to make judgments, he should allow me to make those judgments. Even when it comes to him, he should allow me to make those judgments. And God does that. He said, anyone who wants to follow, here's the way. Anyone who wants to follow, it's open to him. Anyone who doesn't, then that's open to him too. It's open to him to disagree or to not follow. This is the way of God. There was a story also of King Solomon. Peace be upon the Prophet Solomon. Suleiman, we say in Quranic language. He decided over a matter that involved two women, both claiming to be the mother of a baby. And the real mother of the baby, she came to King Solomon asking him for his help. So King Solomon, as the story goes, he asked the mother to give him the baby. With both of the women claiming the baby there before him. Then he took his sword and he said, I'm going to give each of you a half. And immediately, the real mother, she screamed and said, give her the child. Then he took the child and gave it to the mother who screamed and said, give her the child. Now to me, that's not a story that we are all to see on that level only. But what are we to see that through that woman, God's own mercy, God's own love is shown. That God is the one that said, rather than have my human being split in half, where one part of his life is cut off from his other part, his emotional side is cut off from his intelligence, I let him have both intact, keep him intact. I could have split him and made him incapable of having his emotions affect his intelligence, or his intelligence affect his emotions. Then he would have obeyed me in everything, because he wouldn't have been able to think and reason and make independent choices like he can. So rather than split him, I kept him in whole. The world splits him. The world is splitting him up and claiming him to be their child. But I will not split him. I invite him to think on his own. I invite him to evolve his human side, his both his emotional makeup and his rational makeup, to evolve and evolve freely and mature. And those who mature and appreciate me, I've given them the capacity, the mental capacity, the emotional capacity. I've given them the capacity to appreciate me in their emotional life and in their rational life, and to come to a reconciliation within themselves, where their emotions embrace their reasoning, and their reasoning embrace their emotions, and they say, praise be to the one God who created me. He made us to do that. He created us to have that kind of capacity. But he leaves it to us to make choices and to come to our own conclusions and to suffer a benefit from the consequences or from the conclusions that we make. A beautiful story. Really not showing us a woman, but showing us God. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if I would identify his strengths, his significance, his importance, I think I would have to say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was in touch with the nature of his people and the needs based in their nature. And he addressed those needs in a very bold and profound way. And the way that he did it sometimes would make somebody think that that man wasn't a religious man. That man wasn't all about God, obeying God. Because he hung some dollars out before your eyes. And I heard him in last maybe 2, 3, or 4 years of his life tell his staff, brothers, go get the money. I heard that with my own ears. See, but I knew my father, too. I did. I knew him. And I knew he was not materialistic. Never has been, never became materialistic. No matter how much he said, get this and get that, in his own personal life, you could see that he really didn't care about diamonds. He didn't care that much about fine shoes, fine clothes, fine anything. It was just something temporary for him, just something to create the effect he wanted to create. And he knew that in order to attract his people who wanted to eat some meat and be able to leave some gravy in the plate. See, most of them ate meat, you couldn't leave the gravy in the plate. He knew for his people, he had to show that he himself was aware of the material need in their life in order to get them to pay him attention. In fact, like my brother sitting out there, used to be Assistant Supreme Captain. I say used to be. Now he's Dawah man. And for those in the audience who are not Muslim, familiar with our language, Dawah man means he propagates, he invites people to the religion. Yeah. So, although he has more interest than that, too, and I appreciate that in him. He still want to be able to eat that meat and not lick the plate, too. Yes. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, when he was driving his staff to work hard for a better material showing for the Nation of Islam, he was not doing it as a man greedy for the world. I know him. I'm his son. I was his son, and I'm still his son. I know him. He was doing it because he felt that our condition demanded that some leader lead us to a better material life, lead us to a promised land of some money in our pockets. So that's what he said. He gave us the words of his teacher, plenty of money. He better say plenty of money. He better not say a little money. Or a moderate amount of money. He better, that wouldn't do us. We need plenty of money because we ain't got the sense to grow money. So we need enough to satisfy us until we die. If it's going to run out before I die, I don't want to listen to you, man. I'm not talking about all of us. All of us is not broken down as thoroughly as the majority of us. So, the honorable Elijah Muhammad was aware of that, and he addressed that. Now, surprising it may be to you, this interest is also addressed in our religion, in our holy book. God says that he wants us to have establishments and good establishments. God says in our holy book to us in the Quran, the book called Quran or Quran in Arabic, he says that he will guide us to Kauthar. Kauthar. Kauthar means abundance. Abundance. See, if anything was wrong in the scriptures that came before, the Quran addressed it and showed us it was wrong. In the Bible that came before the Quran, the promise there is that he came to give you life and life abundantly. Now, some stupid person in religion, maybe I'm using a hard word there, some uninformed or misinformed person in religion, they will think that life means just life, just happiness in the religion, just a happy, high spirit, a good spirit in the church. He came to give us this an abundant life. And they would just get more and more of it and start saying, "I just, we're not going to let you know it. I just, you're never going to tell the Lord. The cup get full and runneth over." Then they think that that's what it means. We have life and have it abundantly. But it means just what it says, life, human life, and abundantly. Now, what accounts for human life? Is it a lot of flesh, a lot of children, a lot of people? Not necessarily. What accounts for human life is the condition that accommodates human life and accommodates us in a nice and pleasant way. So if we want to have life, we got to have a condition that accommodates my life. Don't put me on rocks to sleep tonight and tell me I got life. Don't serve me a bowl of oodles and noodles and tell me that's life. So life is the good life that we have come to understand or perceive on this earth. The good life that makes human beings happy, that's life. And more abundantly, that means you're going to have more of the things that make your life pleasant and satisfying. You're going to have more of those things. That's exactly what the promise is. You think now because you've been believing in God, and you move from one mule to 10, from one cow to 15, from one camel to 100? You think that's the limit? Now, after all, you're going to be riding in cat lights, Lincolns. See, God is a foreknower. He knew what was possible for us on this earth. He himself put the cat lights in the creation. He put the Lincolns in the creation. Yeah. He put everything that we are seeing in this advanced world of man, he put it in creation. And he knew exactly when it was going to come out. And he knew back then when you were riding on that duckin', feeling like you were riding on a cat light, that you were going to think differently once you got in that cat light and sit on that seat and turn them windows up by power and pass the ducky dripping his stuff and not even smell it. Pass the ducky driver fanning himself and you don't even feel it, air conditioned. God knew that. He put all that in the creation for us and knew exactly the time it was going to come out. That's the God we believe in. That's the only God. Allahu Akbar. God is greater. That's what we are saying. God is greater. Praise be to Allah. Now, the thing that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad sensitized us to want, now we can have them without any problem. The things that Honorable Elijah Muhammad hinted for us to think and go after, now we don't have to have it hinted to us anymore. See, if the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I'm looking at God's plan for us, and I'm judging, or I'm explaining, pardon me, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did and why and how far it can go. That's what I'm doing right now. Yes. If the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had openly expressed everything, looking back at that time, 1930s, 40s, 50s, even the early 60s, I don't think it could have happened. There have been a lot of trouble, a lot of innocent people dead. Yes. A lot of loss of innocent people's lives. I'm talking to you now in a way that I couldn't talk to you in 1930. No way. They would have killed me, or God would have had to just turn the country into nothing but a lake of blood in order to establish me. Yes. Even now, there's a minority, not a majority in the society of the non-Muslim, but there is a minority, and a powerful minority, that's quietly watching us. And they hate what we are doing. They hate what we are about. They would prefer that we go back and join Farrakhan. They'd be much more comfortable. Now let me explain. See, it was God's divine wisdom, God's divine care for us, that put us in a situation where we wouldn't be just killed outright. Moses was put into a slime basket. A basket with little small pieces of wood and pitch, slime, like slime, put on the basket to hold together. It dried, and then they tarred it and made it so it could float down the river. Float down the river. No oars. No one in charge of its guidance. The river itself is trusted to take him down the river, not up. Now, who would think that something as big as that Egypt at that time would be seen as down in the eyes of God? But he trusted the life that he wanted to plant to go down before it goes up. Praise be to Allah. So we were sent down the river into the Nation of Islam. So that we be cared for by somebody in the kingdom that would like us. Right? Yeah. So our Elijah Muhammad, he liked us. And when we got in the white man's discriminated world, where he discriminated against us, saw us all as inferior, he looked at us and he said, "Oh, I like them. But I can't tell anybody. Oh, they're good for us." They saw value, just as the wife of the Pharaoh looked at Moses and was attracted to him. She saw value in that child. They looked at the child, Nation of Islam, or as Elijah Muhammad put it, the baby, Nation of Islam, and they were attracted to it. Right now, we're still getting praise for that baby. By members in the law enforcement? Huh? See, yes, the one thing we had to appreciate was the neatness, the discipline, the respect of those young men in the Nation of Islam. They appreciated that. They appreciated the spirit of industry, too, that the Nation of Islam put into us, or that Honorable Elijah Muhammad put into us, the spirit of industry in us. So here we are, put in a basket, because after all, when she put that child in a basket, that was the first time the child went down. See, when the mother put the child in the basket, she put it down. Then she put it on the river, and the river took it down. Now see, when we were put in the Nation of Islam, we were put down. And then when the Nation of Islam was put upon the river of the world, and floated down to the United States concerns and interests, the river took us even more down. And the more we began to get place in the kingdom of the world, U.S., the more we went down. Until someone among us was told, "Don't you know you got a mission?" You ain't supposed to stay here. This is not the end of your journey. You situated good now. You enjoying the cat life, Lincolns, Rolls Royce, Mercedes Benz, diamonds, furs, long leather coats, alligator shoes, big hats, bow ties and stick pins, etc. And a big mouth. And just screaming all over the place, flaunting your freedom. This ain't the end of your journey. I'm getting a signal back there. They say they're not hearing too well back there next to you. Okay, now. Allahu Akbar. All right. Thank you. We appreciate your help, but we don't want to be talking here up here and missing half the audience. Sometimes the one in the rear, the ones that we're going to need to bring up the front. Yes. So what I'm saying here is that this religion brings or makes possible for us complete freedom. So if you miss something, you're going to get it now in summary. Don't worry. This religion brings to us complete freedom. And if someone among us had been a speaker or a leader of ours for our complete freedom, as I said earlier, I think this country would have been turned into a lake of blood, or we, God, would have sacrificed us, and we just would have been destroyed. This country was not ready at all for anybody among us to speak for our complete freedom. Now, we may think that President Abraham Lincoln, may God bless his soul, rest him in peace eternally. I wish him happiness and his descendants happiness. But if we think that his order that we be free was an opening for us to go into complete freedom, we're a long ways from seeing the reality. The freedom he gave us was the freedom that was given to any visitor in the myth or the mythology about Egypt, ancient Egypt, and the impossibility of just anybody coming in to ancient Egypt and enjoying it. The story in the mythology goes like this. It says anyone who came to visit or come into Egypt, they were questioned by an oracle. The oracle is a mystery, a myth or a mystery, some kind of fashioned material thing has a voice and can speak to you, and is set there on the gates or at the gates of Egypt to see that no one came in that shouldn't come in. And this thing called oracle would ask the one approaching a question. If the one approaching answers the question correctly, they could come in. The question was, what walks on four? Are you hearing back there now? Okay, good. All right. I don't know if we got a delicate system here. We just gonna have patience with it. All right. Now, you know, sometimes what I say, it'll hurt even this mill. Well, you know what this is gonna make us do? Work harder to acquire facilities that will accommodate thousands. Yes, that's what we're going to have. So, it's on now, right? Yes. So I don't think anybody is doing anything. I don't think anybody's monkeying with it. We are just being tested at the junction. Give a chance to some to go the way they want to go. Yes. Now, the oracle would say, would ask this question, what walks on four, then on two, and then on three? And if you didn't know how to answer that question, Egyptian ancient mythology says you wouldn't get into Egypt. So, into Egypt means that you wouldn't be able to go into Egypt and benefit as a free person. Now, what kind of freedom was needed in order for that person to benefit? Knowledge are key to the kingdom of Egypt. You see? They needed knowledge, are the key to get into Egypt. We were only freed physically, and later won the opportunity, because of good support from the good people of the country and the world, and many sacrifices. On our side, and also fights with others. But finally the opportunity came for us to go to the same schools for positions in the government, even the presidency. So we may say that full freedom, at least in man's eyes, finally came. But that was a slow and long and painful process. And let me tell you, that freedom is still not complete for us. Why do I say for us? We are people who once had our life in traditional life of our forefathers. I don't care if that life was not Islamic. We did have our life in traditional life. And we know for a fact that Islam was the strongest religion on the African continent when we were made slaves, when we were brought over here. Not Christianity, not ancestor worship. Islam was the strongest religion on the continent of Africa when we were brought, and our parents, four parents, were brought to this country and made slaves. That's a fact of history. And we were cut off from that life of tradition, life of inherent Islamic heritage, or inherent guidance. Where you inherit guidance from your fathers and mothers, you were cut off from that. And in time, there were no traces, hardly at all, of any connection whatsoever with that life in Africa. Muslim life or any other, Christian or any other. What does that mean? That means that we are a very strange people in America. Jews are not cut off from their traditional life. Irish are not. Polish are not. Italians are not. All of those people have, among their people, people who can speak back to the oracle and answer the oracle correctly. Now, just as there was an oracle to check those who wanted to enter Egypt and enjoy the full freedom of that land, modern Egypt has her oracle. And if you don't know how to answer the mystery questions or the mysterious questions, then you can't enjoy full freedom here either. Because the Egypt that immediately meets your eye is a created Egypt, created to confound your senses and keep your mind from ever arriving at the destiny where you are able to see behind the curtain or interpret the codes. Yes. Now, we don't need everybody to have this kind of knowledge. All we need is a leader with that kind of knowledge. And that leader knows how to steer his people safely and correctly into the path that will take them to the destiny. Now what I'm saying is that African Americans are in a real disadvantage. That's why we have no consistent leadership.
That's right.
We have leaders that come up and they see politics as the role to take. And we have other leaders come up and they see education as the role to take. And others come up and see money as the role to take. But never have we before this time had someone to come up and see life as the role to take. Yes, life is the role to take. And any other role by itself, or either in a combination, short of that combination that satisfies life, takes you off the course of life, takes you off the road of life. So our people are dying because they're not on the road of life. They're destroying themselves because they're not on the road of life. They're dissatisfied with their accomplishments because they're not on the road of life. We have among us a professional class with plenty of money, plenty intellectual esteem in society, plenty recognition to their fine talents, mentally and otherwise. They are achievers. But our achieved class today represent the most psychologically or emotionally miserable of our whole lot. They're the most miserable in the whole lot of the black people or the African-American people. Why? Because they are meeting with the greatest amount of disappointment. What is the disappointment? Disappointment to their soul. Their soul is disappointed. See, we, as small achievers, we think the soul will be pleasant and relaxed or satisfied if we can just get some money. Some of us think if we can just get to travel, you know. If I can get me a car so I can go downtown and uptown when I want to. Go to New York when I want to. Maybe drive to Atlanta. Oh boy, I wouldn't want nothing else. And I imagine some of us have told God that in a prayer. But see, the soul sits quietly. The soul rests quietly in an establishment we call the human person. The soul rests there quietly with no arm or nothing to reach out. It can't reach out. It can only signal you to reach out. It can't reach out. It ain't got no arm, no nothing, no leg, no limbs at all. And the soul, this can't communicate to you directly. So the soul just so happy that you're going on a path of progress, the soul just waits. So its waiting tells you, even my soul is happy. Yeah. But the soul, it knows where you're supposed to be seated or where you're supposed to be placed in order for you to really be comfortable and pleased and happy. So the soul waits for you to get that car. And when you get it, after a while, you say, Allah, may I change my request? May I add something to the list? I know I told you that would do it. So here we got those progressive blacks with millions of dollars in the bank. Big shot. Big in. Even the white man saying yes, sir. See, I didn't say the white man saying yes, sir. Watch me again. The white man saying yes, sir. And trying to show that big black man that he's a good servant so hard that the black man had to call him back. Yes. Say, wait a minute, George. Wait a minute. Come back here, Mr. Haggerty. Mr. Haggerty, come back. I wasn't finished. And we also stop by my home and tell my wife to send me that telegram to tell me. Yes. That's a white man. And this black man goes home and he's miserable. Black man sits down in a television discussion or interview, and he expressed more dissatisfaction, more disappointment, more anguish than the brother out there in the street with nothing but time. All he wake up with hours. That's all he got is hours. So that's all he's conscious of. The reason is that Allah created every human person for complete freedom. Complete freedom. And anything short of complete freedom will at one point before you die register on you as a big disappointment. Now, this is not to discourage anyone who wants to move up in this society. No, we got to move up. That class up there, they can do so much for their people if they get the unks cross in their hand. Now I'm going back to ancient Egypt. You know. They could do so much for their people if they could get the key of life. That's what the Ox Cross is called in ancient mythology, Egyptian mythology. The key of life. If they can get the key of life in their hands, they could do so much for their people. Right away, it would make them feel accomplished rather than disappointed. What makes them feel disappointed is that they're where the other man is, but they can't enjoy it like the other man does. The other man ain't worried. This soul ain't carrying the burden or question of who am I? Why am I in this state? Why can't I sit with Mr. So-and-so, who is not of my race, my colleague, and feel as good about my people as he feel about his? Why I sit here burdened with the condition of my own people, even though my situation materially is good. You see? When I say burdened with the condition of God's city, I don't mean that he now wants to do something about your unemployment. I don't mean that. I mean that your poverty is seen in him. The man who come from his people looks at this man, one individual that's God, but he sees him belonging to a people that have nothing almost. A people that have not. So the group esteem is not there for him, where the group esteem is there for another man. You know the greatest thing that is holding back the American Indian? The condition of their people on the whole. They got a few among them who are achievers. Few among them who are rich people, big, strong business people. But they carry the burden of the majority of their people. So they don't have a good life in this country. Now, how are we going to solve that problem? Will more money to the poor solve that problem? More jobs and more money to our poor solve that problem? No. Something got to happen to bring the complete life or the complete freedom, or at least faith in it, to our many. And the science of how to chart the way has to be in the hands of some of our leaders, in the heads of some of our leaders. So that when they speak to us, they make us feel comfortable. See, you got leaders that's speaking to you, but you can hear in their voice that they ain't much better off than you. They may have money. They may have center stage right now in the media, but something is telling you they're miserable just like you are. When you listen to me, do I impart or register any of that misery to you? No. Because it's not in me. All of it's out of me. So when a white man looks at me, he doesn't see a burdened man. And when I relate to him, he gets no communication from me that I am a burdened man. Because I'm not. I'm a free man. And money is not my esteem. No. Power is not my esteem. No. What's my esteem? Freedom. Freedom is my esteem. I sit there and look at him and say, buddy, you're no freer than I am. You might think you are, but I know you're not. And most likely you're not as free as I am. So God has put the key of life in my hand. Yes. What is the key of life? The knowledge of life is the key of life. The knowledge of life. Especially the knowledge of the human life. What makes the human being feel accomplished? Most people don't know. And the world disappoints them. Nothing makes the human being accomplished but his belief that he has satisfied what his creator wanted of him. When he feels that he has satisfied what his creator wanted of him, then he's completely free. He suffers no loss of esteem. No. He is honorable in his own eyes because he knows he's honorable in the eyes of his Lord. Now, we have achievers, African-American achievers. They may be honorable in your eyes, but when they look at themselves in their mirror, they know they are not honorable yet in the eyes of their Lord Creator. No, they're not honorable yet. Not any of these I see. How come they're not honorable yet? Because they're still trying to live in someone else's life system. That's what tells me that. The Irish, the Irish that are established and the Irish that represents the endurance of the Irish people, those people are not established in America's life system. They are established in the Irish life system, the Italian and the Italian life system, the Jew and the Jewish people's life system. The African-American, one day you're going to be established in the African-American life system, in your own life system. How will that life system manifest for you? How will it materialize for you? When you connect again with your people and embrace the excellence of your people, your African ancestors, if you don't embrace the Muslims, you'll be tormented in your soul forever. Because the Muslims represent the greatest achievement of your ancestors. I know about these fancy tales about the great history of black people on the continent of Africa before Islam and the charge that Islam disestablished or hurt the black man of Africa. We know about that. But we don't have any history worth putting the stamp of approval on that shows learned men coming from all parts of the known world to a particular town of black people just to benefit from the wisdom and insights of those black people other than Timbuktu. And when a white man who has insight or knowledge of our history and insight into your particular black problem, image problem, when he sees you and envies you for you showing off some achievement or some advantage that you may have, sometime it will be one of those wise ones, and he will say, Timbuktu, and laugh. That's to say, you don't have your Timbuktu anymore. You're showing off, but you don't have your Timbuktu anymore. So even though you may have more money than him, you may have more of a lot of the things of the world, worldly things than he has, he's saying that my people is established as the knowledgeable people. And they come to the shrine of America, not to Timbuktu, not to black folks anymore. But there was a day in history when they came to the blacks to get more knowledge, to learn more of the sciences, to get insights so that they can make more progress in their respective lands. Used to come to Timbuktu in Africa. And what made possible that development of those intellects, of those minds? It was the Quran. The Quran in Arabic. The ability to read the Quran in its language that it was revealed in. And a mind to appreciate and digest what is written on the pages of the Quran. Yes, it was the availability of the Quran and the knowledge to get the benefit from it that made that possible. Life needs the right kind of circumstances in order to benefit. A living thing, God says that he has made us on this earth or created us like plants, like plant life. And we know that plant life, in order for it to grow and thrive or prosper, it needs its environment. It needs earth, and then earth with the food in it for that plant need. And it needs water sufficient, and air, sunlight, etc. And sometimes it needs attention from a higher life. Certain things we plant, they wouldn't even survive without man. If they survived, they would never come to the quality or to the lustrous growth that man makes possible. Is that not true? Likewise, the human, as the garden of his Lord, has to have his Lord attend his life in order for his life to grow to the quality and the lustrous growth that God intended for it, or that it is capable of. I'm not talking about God as a myth. I'm not talking about God as a dream, God as someone's fancy. I'm talking about God that made sky and earth, trees and plants and animals and everything to follow a logic, and made man and woman to follow a logic. That's the God I'm talking about. The God that created everything to follow a logic, and created human beings to follow a logic. And if you accept that God did that, then you should want to be in accord with that logic. And that logic is knowledge. And that logic is the key to human life. Yes, we're hitting and missing. We think life is a game in Las Vegas. It's not. It's a job at the table of the scientists. Now, you know, we can accept that we need political leaders. Some of us even accept that we need the church leaders, spiritual leaders. And I know we accept that we need academic leaders, leaders in the field of education. I know we accept that. The most difficult task of them all is how to live on this earth. And we think we don't need a leader in that area of life, which is life. We do. When you study the history of societies on this earth, until modern times, they always have a leader of life. They may call him the medicine man, I don't care what they call him, the shaman, I don't care what they call him, the chief, but he's a leader representing their life. And they believe that God favored him, and I don't care how they perceive that God. They may call him the cloud, the sun, the lightning, they may call him a snake, a tree, or whatever. I don't care how they perceive that God. They believe that God has superpowers that goes beyond the material conception before them. And they believe that that God has such powerful spiritual power that he communicates through their chief or through their medicine man or whatever they may call him. And they follow him and they trust his wisdom, they trust his judgment, and that's how they survive. Now, leaders on that level, they're just going on the strength of nature without revelation, without real revelation. When real revelation comes, we benefit and we prosper on this earth because we follow those revealed men. Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, peace be upon them and the many others. After revelation comes, the penitent man cannot compete with the man following revealed guidance. He cannot compete. Now here we are, cut off from our ancient tradition. So we're put in a circumstance in this country that shows us or restricts us to the position in terms of advantage and disadvantage of the primitive man. Our leaders in the religions, they are so blinded by the lights of this world, the attractions of this world. They're so blinded by the attractions of this world that they never come to a peaceful state within themselves that permits them to see their circumstances separate from the circumstances of other races. Here he is, he's in the same Christianity that the white man is in. But his Christianity will not equip him to compete with the white population. What is the difference? The white man has leaders. The white men have leaders that talk to them with confidence, with vision, with future in their perception. And when they speak to them, they register the power and the strength and the conviction of their leaders. And they respect their leaders and follow their leaders. So the majority of their people stay in a good situation, and they only have a small percentage that's lost or destroyed in the world. Whereas we don't hardly have a single leader that can speak to the total need in us for freedom and reconciliation with our Lord. I could go on and point out some material things to you, but I don't want to burden you too much. No, I'm not going to do it. God has blessed me with an easier route than I used to take. And I thank God for it. But I could point out to you some material things that you would readily see that have a negative effect in our life and a positive effect in the white man's life. Because his leaders, they design his world for him. And now you are in his world looking at that design. I'm talking about the spiritual world. The material world, it has its traps too and its marks of Satan. But I'm talking right now about the spiritual world. You have been created on this earth, all of us, for life and life abundantly, quoting the scripture, the Christian Bible. Or in the terms of the Quran, you have been created to grow. That's what God says. You have been created to grow, and grow means prosper. Progress until you reap the fruits of the blessings of the harvest of your growth. maturity for your growth. You have been created to grow. And God says that he has given us abundantly. Speaking to the prophet, but it's for all of us. I have given you abundance. Abundance. Kauthar. Abundance. Plenty. Much. That's what it says. In the same book, tell us that the greed for abundance will bring us to the grave. So here's something that God wants us to have, but if we have a hunger for that, it will destroy us. But isn't that what the wise and humanly balanced tell us? That the money and material power, that if you go after those things with your sight on that as being the most important, it will corrupt your soul. But they don't tell you it's bad, because they know that God told them in that Bible too that he's going to give them plenty of it. God, Elijah Muhammad wasn't talking foreign when he said, God come to offer you, invite you to plenty of money. Good home. And friendship in all walk of life. That's the truth. He just put it in the common language. He put it in common language. But God puts it in a more expressive language and a richer language. When God says, seek by the means I have made available to you. Mean whatever is humanly possible for you. The hereafter. The promise, the destiny. And don't think that's all spook. Don't think that's all spirit. No. A big part of that is right here on this earth. Big part of it, right here on this earth. Even the hereafter, big part of it, right here on this earth. And I'm not saying anything that any Muslim, learned Muslim, can come to me and challenge me and say, you said something wrong, Brother Imam. Let him come. Now I sent him away too weak to carry a timber book. Yeah, you give him a voodoo book, and he'd be too weak to hold that. Because I come straight, and I come upon knowledge. Because I fear God, and I want to be right. Yes. So, when God says to us, seek the hereafter. Actually, hereafter is an English expression. The word is Darul Akhirah. Darul Akhirah. Dar means home, house. Akhirah means a house in the end, in the future. Dar al-Akhirah means seek the establishment in the future, for the future. Seek the future establishment. The home that will accommodate your life. The order that will accommodate your life. Seek the dar. Dar literally in Arabic means house. Dari, my house. That's what dar. Dari means my house. Daruka, your house. To the sister, Daruki, that means your house. Daruna, our house. It's a common word, Dar. And God says, وَتَّقِي فِي مَا أَتَاكَ اللَّهُ دَارَ الْآخِرَةِ. Seek the house of the future. وَلَا تَنْسَ نَصِيبَكَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا. But don't neglect your share of this world. Now, the richness of this language comes now. It manifests. Look, now here's the common ignorant man, how it addresses him and his need. He fears that he's doing wrong when he's worried about getting some food on the table for his wife and children, more than he's worried about saying his prayer today. But his wife and children are hungry. God actually would love him more if he rushed out there to get some food so that his wife and children won't starve than he would if he stopped and prayed all day long. And again, I'm coming from knowledge. I'm solidly supported by knowledge. Now, so I don't want to waste a whole lot of time trying to clear up or justify what I say. I'm just telling you, take my word. I'm standing solidly upon knowledge. So God is addressing him. Say, yes, go after the destiny I want you to come to. With all that you have in your human power or capabilities. But don't neglect your share of this material world. You deserve to eat food like they do. You deserve to wear decent clothes like they do. You deserve to have decent accommodation for your family like they have. Don't neglect that. You deserve to enrich your mind as they do. Rest from work and study for a while. Huh? Don't just rest and go to sleep. Or rest and turn the lights out and do what all animals do. Leave the lamp burning. Meditate on the order of creation and what's behind it. Right? Oh, yeah. And then you'll be making prayer for his remembrance. For Akamis Salat al-Zikri, God says, and establish prayer in my remembrance, or for my remembrance. Praise be to Allah. Now, let me go on. So that's the poor man. That's the ordinary poor man. The most miserable in a lot of people. He has nothing. He fears God. He wants to be good. And there are deceivers who are more educated than he is, who want to exploit him for material gain, material benefits. So they make him think that this money and the material things are poison. Stay away from yaki. Stay away from these poisonous things that you see. This material well is one big gigantic. You know the dragon? You know the dragon, brother? It's one big gigantic dragon. And it is just fiery inside of you. So much fire inside is just the puff of smoke that's coming out all the time from the burning inside, and it's ready to devour all the human person, and it swallows you, and you're no more human anymore. You come out and you're a little dragon, you fire. Don't worry about the job. You are telling me, I asked you to come and join us in Thailand and Chungnang, and Vickers, and it's ridiculous to join us in Vickers. You're telling me you have to work tomorrow, brother, this will take you to the hell. Stay away from the dragon of materialism. And he's affected or influenced by that man that appears to be wiser than he and closer to God than he, etc. So he's affected by him, and now he's telling his wife, don't worry, sister, about Allah will show us the way. And she loved him so much until she saw herself 80 years old, hugging and kissing him and patting and carrying on. But now that has all changed. She's looking at him now and wishes they'd catch a cold that he won't get rid of. So she can get her a better husband. And I'm on your side, sister. Because we want respect on this earth. And we are never going to get respect on this earth until we become whole, complete human beings wanting the complete life that God created us for. Okay. Now, here's the man on that high level taking advantage of the man on the low level. All right? How does this strike him? How does this reach him? It's telling him, here you are. You should be about leading the people to the full benefits of society on this earth. But here you are fascinated by the spiritual things to the extent that you will hold a man, an ignorant man, back from the benefits, material benefits of the world, so that he will be with you, give you company, and be a community for your business people to explore. While you yourself claim that you ain't interested in the business, your business people are keeping the dignity of your race or your ethnic group. They're keeping the material dignity of your group. They got money. They're getting it. You ain't over there telling them don't go after it. You telling this little poor ignorant man not to go after it. And you don't know that you're cutting yourself out of the greater benefit. Because you are neglecting your share of the world too. Your share of the world is to be responsible yourself for dignifying yourself materially and also taking your brother by the hand and showing him the way. And the more numbers that join the effort to enrich the human society with the things of this life in this world, the better off the people will be, the less the world will be troubled. But instead of you doing this, that will help even the destiny. Because if we have no science, no growth in science, no growth in material accomplishment, we are far from that dollar Acura, far from the home in the future. The home in the future is a home for both sides of man, for the whole man. The home in the future is not just to accommodate him spiritually, but it's to accommodate him as a material being, a social being, a political being, most particularly a rational being. As a social being, he can't be fulfilled if he doesn't have any material establishment. If you don't have any material establishment, your social life is tormented. Our children wouldn't be so susceptible. They wouldn't be so vulnerable. They wouldn't be so easy for the dope pushers to get. For the drug traffickers to get. They wouldn't be so easy for the gangs to get. If this world offered them more opportunity in this world. They go to those gangs, they go to the drugs for opportunity in this world. They become dope pushers, etc., for more opportunity in this world. We can't excuse them for sin or for bad moral judgment, but we have to acknowledge also our part in the sin. Our part in it. We are not ourselves in a world that is normal for our children. A world that doesn't offer a bright child a future is not a normal human world. If a world doesn't offer that bright child a future except in crime, except in self-destruction, that world can't guarantee that youth a job. Post a very bleak picture to that child. Yes, you're going to school, but we can't guarantee you no job. That's not a human world. That's normal. When man was primitive, out there in the wilderness, his sons and daughters came, and he knew there would be work for them. Civilization takes over, and the big capital holders, asset holders. This is not attack upon capitalism. The big asset holders, they design the world all over and determine how many jobs are going to be available. The population is growing, and they say they can't accommodate all the need for jobs. So they allow a crime economy to operate right along with a legitimate economy. Now, who is responsible for the criminals? Directly. The society is directly responsible for the criminals. The criminals are responsible only after we have addressed the circumstances.
You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role.
You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role.
I'll bring it down now. You know that we got a job to do. I'm talking to you and you and you. Every man, a woman, boy and girl. We got the job to remake the world. So get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty
come on and get
play
up your role. Get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
To remake the world, we got to start with this land. Our country is sinking in the sand. The president is just one man. He can't solve everything, but united we can. Or you people can lend a hand. Examples are in great demand. Come on, be a great woman, be a strong man. Show the American how to be American. And get up,
you might play your role.
Get up,
you might
come on and get
play
up. Come on, get up,
you might play your role.
Get up,
you might
now.
Because we should get the children involved, and then they would not grow to be tough, grow to be hood. If you want to do some good,
get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Yeah, now the most important part must be dealt to ten. To your countries, help to add to your communities, well, to give your children some help. I got, you got, you got, you got, we got to listen to what I tell you, to put the world in the right state of health. Remake the world by remaking yourself, and get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Get up,
you mighty,
come on, and get up,
your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
You might be just a little bit.